Okay, well, we got enough of us to get started. Somebody want to say the prayer?
I can do that real quick.
Okay.
Project Heavenly Father, we're thankful for this Saturday. We're thankful for the opportunity to gather together as a board and get some input from our members. We're grateful for all the things that has done for us. Please help us to have a great winter and holiday season. Please also bless us that we'll receive the moisture that we need this year. These things we ask in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
All right. Hang on a second. Okay, well, let's have roll call. I'll go first. Brent Fulmer, Lot 117.
Larry Clarkson, 76.
Mark Batista, 94.
Kevin Poole, Lot 64.
Paidoff, 83.
Michael Jordison, 67.
Devin Tina, 121.
Dan Wirt, 28 plus.
Karen Fry, Lot 13.
Joe Mose, Lot 107.
Jerome and Christina Logan, Lot 51.
Mike McNichols, Lot 270.
Joan Smith, 269.
Vance Green, 156.
Brian Castle, 130.
That everybody? Okay. Scott's not here to read the minutes or to, but I'm assuming it was approved by the board members last month.
Yes.
Kevin?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Cade?
Yep.
All right. Bart?
Yep.
Larry?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
Brent? Brent, this is Karen Fry. I just had a quick question, and I was just wondering why the minutes weren't on the website this month so that people could be aware of what's going on, or, you know, from last meeting. Do you know?
I don't. Michael?
I don't think they're posted until after they've been approved. But I generally haven't posted the minutes. Vance, do you know offhand? I thought they...
The minutes of last month's meeting are not approved until today, when they are approved by the board, and then they are posted. So, yeah.
Larry has it exactly right, and there was a big unnecessary kerfuffle in the past because of this whole very issue. So we're sticking to that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Treasurer's report, Michael.
Oh, winding the year down. The P&L was sent out. We're pretty much in line. Once the cattle company's check comes through, that'll bring us back about to neutral. Right now it shows negative 12,000 or so. Still have plenty of money in the bank to carry business out. There's 70 plus in the main account. The savings account only has 1,200 in it because we moved that 60,000 over into CDs, which last quarter upped that by about, I think it was $2,500. So that's a positive. Any questions?
So, Michael, just to be clear, there's with the two accounts together, there's about 120,000 as of right now, a little over that, 130, 70 and 60.
If you're talking
the CDs and everything,
the reserve funds, which are the CDs, yes, we have roughly 120. If you consider the asset replacement fund stuff, that puts us pretty close to 130 in total assets or cash flow. Yes.
Yeah, so, but the assets fund should go into the reserve fund at the end of this year, right? And then.
No, those are separate. The reserve fund is separate CDs, and then there's an actual account for the asset replacement. Two different accounts.
Gotcha. So the asset replacement's got a little bit more in that.
So. Yeah, there's 5,000 right now, and we'll move pretty close to 5,000.
5,000 in. Gotcha. Okay, thanks.
Anything else?
Is that it, Michael?
Yep, that's it for me.
Any questions from anybody? Okay. Property manager, Kurt on?
It looks like he's there. I don't see an option for us. He just got video. He doesn't have sound. That's going to be fun.
Does he know how to sign?
Well, I don't even know if he can turn his video on. I just say Kurt J without the little mic, and he's got the video crossed off.
Oh, there he is. Okay.
And hopefully Scott's with him. Maybe they can post something in the chat. I don't know if they've got access to the chat.
Maybe move on and come back to that.
Yeah, we can. We can. All right. Okay, we're going on to old and new business. And the first part is, the first part I'm taking, and that is the, reservationist position, applications close on Monday, the 11th, and, decision will be made by the 16th, which I guess is next Saturday.
Yeah.
And so the other thing I wanted to bring up was the RV park and opening it up for member rental. And I would like some feedback from everybody on that.
So I think the board, Brent, already agreed that if there was no work campers in the RV spots that we would allow that to be opened up for rental. So since there's no work campers currently scheduled, I don't see we need to do anything with that. We should be able to just open it up. Unless I'm
all right. Well, we'll, I don't want to turn this into a big long discussion based upon, you know, right now. I just want to get some general feedback from people. If there's interest in opening them up, and then we'll get together and try to put together a fair compensation for members to use the
RV pads.
Individual RV pads.
This is Tina. I would recommend, can we just eliminate the if there's work campers there part and just have it open for members, period? If there's open spots, there's open spots. And just eliminate the work camper part. Not eliminate work campers, but if there's no work campers in the spots, blah, blah, blah. That You know what I mean?
Because if there's one word.
Yeah, so I've actually talked to some people that have done work camper. I haven't done work camping myself. I know Cindy was pretty adamant that work campers don't want to have members, et cetera, there. But everybody I've talked to has stated that that's not normally an issue for them. So I would kind of agree with you, Tina. If it'd make life easier to manage because we're constantly opening, not knowing when it's available, et cetera. I think it'd make it easier to manage if we just opened it up to everybody. And if we did have a work camper, then we would reserve that spot during that period for the work camper in the site, and it wouldn't be able to be reserved by anyways. But that's my opinion. So I don't.
Easy enough just to reserve it for a work camper or a member, it's the same difference.
Agreed.
Well, it's not necessarily the same difference because the value added from a work camper. So, and because we have difficulty in getting work campers, there probably needs to be, if the ranch manager or whomever is going to hire the work camper is able to find one, then we need to be able to have the ability to vacate a space or make sure one is available for those work campers.
I'd agree with that, but I wouldn't want to. I think if we start opening them up, if we have to vacate three of them to make them all empty because we got a work camper all of a sudden, that would be hard. But to vacate one makes sense, you know.
I agree. I mean, I concur with that. I have friends with some people who run some RV parks in the area, and the work campers, you know, have their own space, but they're kind of it's mixed in with everybody else.
Yeah. So, I think we'll have to kind of cross that bridge when it comes to it. If we do rent them out and all three are rented out, I mean, how do we compensate or how do we justify? But I do think priority should be given to a work camper if the work campers are coming in.
Well, the purpose for these was for work campers. So, okay. That's what, yes, it was. That's why we did it. The value is for.
Well, so maybe we just leave one open. I mean, to rent the other two for sure, and then leave one open would be a solution as well. Then we're not having to kick somebody's reservation out. But
that's probably the best solution. But we can discuss the details later.
Mute me. But if you go back in history, the RV pass has always been an issue. It's only recently they were open for work campers. Work campers were not the main reason.
Okay. We can agree to disagree. I designed the septic system, so I have the history of the full time we've actually had those work sites, and so we can agree to disagree on that one. Thank you.
But it sounds like people are in favor of opening them up at least, right? Is that what I'm hearing?
I would like to speak. As director of infrastructure, are we even going to have work campers? Because so far we have done absolutely zero to address the issues that we are faced with the whole cleaning cabins and all the rest of it. The only thing we've done so far is eliminate the reservation in this paid position. So we need to get ourselves in gear and figure out what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. But we're going to be at April with our pants down and absolutely no one cleaning cabins, and then everybody's going to complain because nothing's happening. So what are we going to do here? You know, I'm hamstrung. I'm only one individual. I need six other board members to get on board with me on this stuff and make a decision. Are we going to eliminate the work campers and put a $10 a night fee on the work camper RV spots, which isn't even going to cover a paltry portion of what the value is? Bart, you're absolutely right. As a work camper, I figured around $9,000 a stand is what my time was worth as a work camper. I put 11 months in it. So you can figure around $18,000 worth of labor that Cindy and I did off of those work camper spots. Now, if you guys think we can rent those three spots for anywhere near that amount, go right ahead and be my guest.
Well, do we know who – so Cindy was handling the work camper program, and when she left, did that program go with her? Did it become part of the reservationist duties?
Not the reservationist duties, no. What? Not the reservationist duties. So, again, so my response back to Kevin is that for work campers – The actual responsibility for taking care of the cabins, doing the laundry, doing et cetera, is Kurt's. So if we don't have a cabin person to do do reservations, do whatever, it's like back to Kurt. I mean, if he needs help from us as a board to come up with work campers or get somebody to coordinate work campers, then Kurt needs to come to us and state that that's what is needed, and we can try and work towards doing that. But so far, I haven't heard Kurt ask for work campers or management or whatever that way. So, Kevin, I mean, I think you bring up a valid point. Are we going to have the work camper program? It was to help out Kurt. But I think Kurt needs to manage or work through that.
Jeff, let me... Jeff, please. Allow me to address this, please.
Go ahead.
Okay. On the last vote, we voted to eliminate a position that we didn't vote to eliminate by simply voting away the money that was being paid to the individual that was handling all of that. Now, we don't know if Cindy would have been willing to continue and assist us with the work program because we never asked the question. All we did was eliminate the position. So we kind of cut our nose off to spite our face because somebody volunteered to do it for free. So, you know, I don't think that that was a very wise decision on the board's part. That's why I voted against it twice, and then we narrowed that vote down to simply support the budget as proposed. So it was 6-1 anyway, so I went along with it. What choice did I have? But the truth of the matter is that basically we've engineered our own circumstances concerning the work campers and the RV pads. Thank you.
Well, that's not entirely true. So Cindy, as a board member, was heading up volunteerism, so the volunteer programs for the ranch, not just work campers, but across the board. So did a different board member, when she's no longer a board member, pick up that part, volunteerism, or volunteerism just went away because Cindy is no longer a board member? Because work camper programs would fall under the volunteer part of the board duties, not the reservation is paid or unpaid, it wouldn't matter. So what I'm asking is who is picking up the work camper part of the program? Because I visited those websites. There's like 11 work camper websites out there. I don't find Deer Springs Ranch on any one of them.
Well, so I think that's Kevin's question. That's Kevin's question, right, is we've gotten rid of Cindy, so what are we doing with the work camper program? So I personally think the work camper program needs to continue if we can make it work and we can find, and to Jeff's point, somebody can manage it, can post it to all the websites and do whatever. But who's going to do that is a good point, Kevin. So, I mean, is that something that falls under you for infrastructure? Do we throw it back at Kurt because it helps him out with his contract? What's our solution? Do you have a proposal?
Can I volunteer to do it?
You want to get on it? I would highly recommend getting on it. If you want to volunteer to get on it, run ads on all of these different RV sites and all that, but be very well aware. We need to vet the people that we're bringing in here because we do not want to bring in somebody cooking methamphetamine in their trailer because they think it's a cheap, easy spot out in the wilderness to do something illegal. So everything on the work camper needs to be vetted and taken care of because the people that Cindy were bringing in were all high-quality people. We didn't have issues with any of them. The worst problem we had... all electric RV that was killing us because we had to try to provide them a generator. And as far as Cindy's volunteer, yes, she volunteered and did that of her own accord. I didn't know that that would have fallen under the board president's purview if her duties was to be with the board position that she held. Go ahead.
It seems like we had a successful work camper program for the past 2 years. We didn't have them all the time, but we had a good model. It seemed to work. And suddenly we had new board members, and now it's complete, pardon my language, shit show. And so we've decided to dismantle what worked. And we all, well, what were we getting out of it? We were getting you know, how many specific hours per week from each one of those work campers, which I've, you have to have a really dedicated volunteer to get that same number of hours per week of labor. And we all, and then we have to remember, you know, Kay, do you want to say throw it back on the, on Kurt? We have, you know, all last year, that is constant discussion in the board meetings and as the few, the past couple ones we've had, we've recognized that the workload that is in that ranch manager position is much more than one person. And then we like to say, oh, well, that's just his fault. He's a sucker for signing up for it. And he needs to just do it. The reality is we've had those discussions. So he took it on because he cares about the ranch. And as far as I can remember, we've been, the decision has been made, not decision, but the intent was to find a way to increase positions for people who do this work. So that, because the ranch is larger than one person can handle and much more than a $40,000 per year contract can cover. Those work campers helps solve that problem. And we were doing that. Seemed to be good. Now we're just fumbling. I don't understand why we're trying to reinvent something that we had working rather smoothly.
No, so I'm not sure that we're trying to reinvent something, and I was never under the impression that the work camper program was going to go away. I mean, Kevin brings it up because it was something that Cindy was doing previously, but that was never in the reservationist job position in order to do that. So back to back to my point, I think we've got two options, right? What's that?
She was the board president too.
Right.
So yeah. She was doing reservationist work and also all that other stuff that you do as a board member. So let's not conflate all the work she was doing for the good of the ranch with the fact that she was also doing reservationist work.
No, well, that's what I'm trying to say. So again, you kind of have to separate the duties if we're going to replace it. So we're asking for replacement for the reservationist piece of things, but now we need to have, we need to fill the position for work camper, and either that can be a board member that's taking care of it, it could be a volunteer that's doing it, or it could be Kurt that's doing it. Whoever does it, I think Kurt needs to agree with it because he's going to be the one directing and managing and monitoring those people or individuals. So they've got to be people that he's willing to work with. And, you know, so he's got to be comfortable with whoever's getting those in, and there's got to be some sort of review process with that. But that was all taken care of by Cindy before because she was a work camper for a good portion of the time. And so you got work camper and president and volunteer and reservationist. We're all kind of lumped in together, and now we've got to fill that position. So I see any of those working. I see a volunteer helping out with it working. I see Kurt taking it on working. I see a board member working. We just need to get somebody to do the job. Does anybody have a preference as to which one it should be, or are we going to continue to discuss it? Or
this is a discussion that we can have via email, and we can ask for somebody to volunteer to do the work camper thing, and we can just move forward. All I wanted to do at this point in time was to bring up the RV park. And the opening it up to members, and we can work out some kind of a system. My issue here was this. Yes, a good reason that we put the RV park together was to help the property manager do his job. But the majority of the property manager's job is about the cabins. There is no argument there, but the entire membership paid for those RV pads.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that they should be opened up for the entire membership. We can reserve a spot for work campers. We don't know if the membership's even going to use them. I'm just saying we open it up. That's all I'm asking.
My apologies, Brent. I did not mean to interrupt. I thought you were done.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
Would we open it up currently? There's no water. Would they be only open at the times the cabins are open? Could people dry camp now today? I guess all those things need to be discussed, but that would be my question. Are they open during the winter?
Well, Kevin and Cindy Poole spend a winter there. Go ahead.
I mean, the septic works. Septic doesn't not work. So that's a benefit to somebody, but they probably still have to haul they have to provide their own water.
The water works. The water is not shut off. It's never off.
Okay, so then it's still value for somebody. So if we can get a work camper to do some work, that's great.
Oh, I'm talking for a regular member.
For members.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't get to my lot, you know, due to snow, and I decided to bring the RV down and stay in the RV spot. So I just wanted to know if they'd be open year-round, and it sounds like that's possible, that those three spots could be open year-round.
So we could at least try it and make sure that there's no issues or whatever with it. But
is there an expectation of plowing, of the ranch manager plowing those rows if there's snow? Or is that on the ranch manager, or is that on whoever's going to stay there?
The ranch does not provide snow plowing for anyone other than the ranch manager getting in and out of headquarters.
Okay, just clarifying that. So, okay.
Thank you.
We keep adding services and products that are wanted or desired or needed or required, but everybody's totally against adding any dollars to pay for it.
I understand. That's why I articulated that. That's why I specifically stated it.
The RV pads work year-round. The septic works year-round. The water works year-round. The problem is going to be whoever's using it, their trailer is going to freeze. Their supply line from the frost-free hydrant to their trailer, to their RV, is going to freeze unless they do whatever they need to do to take care of that. They're going to be stuck in the snow unless they do whatever they need to do to take care of that or pay to have it done.
Okay.
So can I break in? This is Vance, 156. Brent has said it twice, and he's exactly right. All he wanted was a yes or no answer. Now, all this other crap, pardon my French, you guys need to be taken care of offline.
That's a yes from me.
Yes. We're going to do a vote on that.
Actually, I'll make a motion that we open up two of the spots, reserving one of the spots for a potential work camper, unless we need. So leaving one open, but opening up two of the spots for use by members all year round is what it sounds like we're willing to support right now. With the caveat that they'll have to support themselves. So make a motion that we open it up.
I second that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Pop in super quick. It's not hard to create a DocuSign with a type of RV pad waiver outlining, you know, that the member understands their responsibilities and obligations should they use the RV path, so they know, you know.
Well, I think we can even get that into the reservation system too, where they acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Yes,
part of that. So,
yeah. On the reservation system, we have a DocuSign place that they have to acknowledge that. So yes, that's right on the reservation system.
Yeah, so I think we can work out those details and rules after the fact if we open it up. So I heard three yays.
This is Larry. I vote yay to open them up to members with the understanding that we've still got to discuss the price per day or week or month or whatever. And that's the route we need to take to filter out. Like Kevin mentioned, you don't want just somebody camping out there because it's a cheap spot to hide out. It cannot be a drain on the ranch. And so it's not going to be a $10 a day RV spot.
Okay, Larry, are you going to – you're voting in favor of it, and we'll work out
yes.
the details?
Yes.
Okay.
Larry, why, If it's for members only, why can't it be a cheap $10 day rental spot? We're not talking about renting it to the general public. The general public is the work camper part that Kevin was talking about. We need to make sure.
Well, I think we can talk about the fees. We've actually got the fees later on down in the – we can do that with the cabin fees if we need to. But I think, yeah, actual fees can be discussed after. We just need to get approval that we're opening up at this point.
This is Scott, and I vote yes. But we already voted on this a few months ago.
Yeah.
We're just adding to that vote.
We're changing it a little bit, Scott, because now it's opening up to regardless if there's a work camper there or not. The previous vote you guys agreed to was if there was any work campers, they would not be allowed.
Okay.
So that's the change.
All right.
Okay. Well, there's enough in favor. I'm saying we're adopting it, and we'll work out the details, and we'll let the membership know.
Well, Kevin needs to vote.
So I vote no against two positions or two of the work campers places, strictly from the perspective of during season, we had two of them occupied with Cindy taking one and work campers in the other one, which has been fairly consistent for the last 2 years. So I think we should really heavily consider not choking the whole RV park off. So I'm going to vote against.
Look, okay, Kevin, we did say there was going to be a priority for the work campers. I mean, but we can't. Yeah, I don't know if that alleviates your concern or not. But
all right, I'm going to move on this. We'll work out the details and we'll let the membership know.
This is Dan. As a corollary to all of this, perhaps we should consider. That members bring their own laundry, own linens to the cabins.
We're going to be discussing cabin stuff in a little while.
All right.
Can we? Can you bring that up then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Brent, I'd actually like to make a motion. We're getting a lot of discussion, and I want the members to participate. I don't know the best way to do this, but we've got member participation at the end of the meeting, and maybe we hold off our votes until we hear from the members, but I'd kind of like to have the board do the main discussion and have the members have their feedback near the end, and then maybe we can vote on stuff if we're going to vote on it. I do want to give people an opportunity to feedback, but I think we're going to get derailed a little bit if we're constantly jumping the member input, but I don't know.
Well, I see it both ways. I agree. Say we take a vote on it. We get the membership at the end of the meeting. We get the membership feedback on it. We get their ideas, and then we apply that to the vote we took, or you know whether it passed or whether it didn't. Anyway, I'm moving on from here. Larry, gravel pit.
Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Yep. So I have replaced about half of the quantity of gravel used, association gravel that was used on Broad Hollow. I had planned to do the rest of it yesterday, but just ended up with not enough time in the day, not enough hours of daylight. So I have not finalized a lease agreement contract to present to the board and membership. I'll try to have that thrown together by next meeting. I've continued to do some cleanup around there, but I don't know if anybody has any other specific questions or concerns about gravel pit. I don't have anything else to add.
So, Larry, the only question I've got is, when you say you replaced it, we've got a big pile again that's going to wash away, or did we actually start putting it out on Meadow Canyon, or how are we replacing it? Do we just have the pile right now?
I'm just replacing the pile that we took.
Sounds good. Thanks.
And he's replacing the pile with better material.
Understood.
This is an FYI.
Yep.
Okay. Is that it, Larry?
Yes.
Okay. Cade? Rhodes.
Okay. I should have asked earlier, Danielle, do I have permission to share? Can you go ahead and allow me to share real quick? It looks like I can share. Let me get... Okay, so everybody should be seeing a Google form. I've created a Google form for road maintenance requests, putting this out to the board to see if we want to use it. But I just wanted a way that members could be able to submit requests and we can keep track of them, discuss on board meetings and prioritize, et cetera, that way. So I did state that it'll be reviewed and prioritized with the board of directors. And then safety issues will be prioritized over other road projects. And then also give them an opportunity to do a neighborhood project. So it collects their email address. We've got all the different roads that are listed currently on the map with the map number. And there's a link out to the map so they can reference and find the road, et cetera, where they're at. I did do mile sections along the road so they can identify, you know, it's between mile zero, mile one, or 0.5 and whatever. And there's a link to the Google Earth map. That'll take them to this map where I'm documenting out all the little mile points on the roads. I've still got half of the ranch to get documented, but I'm hoping to get that finished up today or tomorrow. But I've made good progress on the west side of the ranch. I'm up to, through road 23, just to kind of do that. So there's a reference there, but people can also take a reference, you know, just driving the road. I'm going from the start of the road on the east side to the west side. And if it's going north to south, it's from the south side up to the north. So that they can see that. Made it optional to put in GPS coordinates. If they want to give me a GPS coordinate of where a culvert or something along that is lie at. A description of the maintenance that's required. Then I broke it down into different options, type of maintenance, be a safety issue. They want to suggest a neighborhood project. I listed a new driveway in here because I discussed with Larry and in the past, it'd be good for members to inform us if they're connecting a driveway to a road so that we can make sure the drainage and culverts and all that kind of stuff work with the driveway. Listed a culvert cleanout, new culvert grading and gravel. There's other ideas of what types of projects might be out there. Just having people suggest it. Have them put in their lot number, name, and phone number. And then what's their preferred contact method if we have questions, et cetera. So I just wanted to give the board an update on that and see if you guys want to post it out on the website. If there's any thoughts, improvements, et cetera. Related to that. Any comments? Questions?
It looks good, Kate.
Yeah, it looks good. My only question is the Google Doc under your account or is it under DSROA account?
It's currently under my account. I think I can share it with DSROA so it's maintained that way. We can work out the sharing or I don't know if I can export and put it into a DSR. I don't have access to the DSR Google stuff. So you and I can work offline to get it.
No, totally understand. My thought is if you get hit by a bus, you've done all this work and it's gone.
Yeah, no, I'll make sure that we can give at least edit permissions to it. Even if it's in my doc, I'll give edit permissions to the ranch.
So. I really like the idea that you're working with. It looks very, very useful, very functional. My only question is, how can we coordinate this with, like, the flow of work charts that we had worked out in the past with the ranch manager? And obviously this comes into Larry's purview because he's the guy that does a lot of this work. We need to be able to prioritize and get this stuff into the right categories. I mean, bulk information is great, but we need to be able to filter it down to who's actually going to perform the work, where, and when. I mean, maybe that's opening a whole nother kettle of fish, but good job, Kate. Looks great.
Yeah, no, so it's this will enter the request in, and it actually in the background, Kevin, it populates a spreadsheet that we can also give the group membership information to. And then in that spreadsheet, we can add additional columns of who's assigned the work, who's assigned the project, did we reject the project, some of that kind of stuff. I want to be able to keep track of the status of the request in the spreadsheet as well. So this will allow us to keep that historical record, and to Mike's point, we'll leave it for future board members, et cetera, to use if it's there, and they'll have that spreadsheet that they can go ahead and track that information in. So, and then I've got another spreadsheet that I'm managing where I want to keep track of the last time a project was done on a particular section of road, et cetera, so we can kind of be able to manage and prioritize that way. So this would be the front entryway, but we can still do the work orders, et cetera, on the back end to task out the work if we needed to do that. So that's the intent. But thanks, Kevin. Good points.
Cade, this is Larry. Are you the way you're breaking it down, will, like, for instance, culverts be identified by the mileage where they're located on your map going south to north and east to west, or numbered?
I haven't gotten to the culverts yet, but yeah, that's, I'd like to be able to identify the culverts too. Right now we've got the GPS, so hopefully they can just give us a GPS coordinate of a culvert, but I tried to reach out to, Jeff, because supposedly he had some of the culverts documented, and I haven't been able to get that information from him. So after we get the miles documented for each road, then my next project would be to, I think I can overlay and we can start to document where the culverts are and put a name or number to the culvert as well. So that'd be like phase two.
Okay.
But I'll need your help on that if we can't get Jeff's. And even if we get Jeff's, we'll probably have to verify them all too, right? So we'll have to kind of go through that.
Is that it, Cade, or you got more?
That is it. I'm trying. I did stop sharing, so we're good. Okay. Or no, I haven't stopped. Let me stop sharing. That was all I had, unless there are more questions.
No, well, for me, no. Good job. Appreciate all the effort you've gone into it.
Thanks.
Anybody else with questions? Okay. Bart, it's up to you on water update, and I added the member meeting because I had a specific request from Gary Clark. He wants to know when the water committee is going to have a meeting in which we have the principals involved from our water project. I told him it wouldn't be probably until after the first of the year, but I would like you to address it.
Okay. So we received, as everyone's aware, we have our waiver for the booster pumps. This is going to require, this waiver is a temporary waiver that we have to renew every, I think it's 4 years, or 3 years, but we have, so anyways, we have to install these booster pumps, or this, booster pump, workaround. We've priced out the cost for each of the lots and that we're going to be connecting to. And, that comes out for the ranch. It comes out to below $5,000 per lot, which is the amount of money that they initially paid for the connection. There'll be a considerable more expense on the lot owner's side of the connection, as they will need to have a booster pump with some sort of power supply from the tank to their lot. We were looking at a couple different, actually, hold on, let me back up, collect my thoughts there. We priced it out based on a specific 1.5-inch connection. We found out that there are some connections that are 1-inch, not 1.5-inch, so we're going to be updating that. That will likely bring down the cost. We also were looking at trying to do check valves in series, which isn't allowed, so we need to get a waiver. I'm still waiting for a response from the Division of Drinking Water to see if that's an acceptable alternative. Otherwise, we'll have to do double check valve assemblies, which will drive the price up a bit, because of – so while we're working out these details, we can't move forward. Once we get the details, we'll be able to move forward on this. I'm right now preparing a letter that will be going out to those lot members explaining kind of what's going on for their specific instances and kind of what the ranch is going to be paying for them and what that means and what their responsibilities are on their end. I kind of got swamped with work this week, so wasn't able to get it done. So plan to get that done this upcoming week. So, and I think we're probably going to be looking at doing the installs using in-house labor. So ranch manager, I think Larry, we're going to need to get some costs or whoever the ranch manager wants to do the labor. There may be some costs there unless it's volunteered. So that's stuff that still needs to be worked out. And I think we want to get this done probably in the springtime is when we'll be able to do it if weather is starting to hit up at the ranch. Is that, Brent, does that kind of generally answer the question, do you think?
It does. I didn't know you were preparing the letter, and that will be beneficial.
I think that was the due out from the Water Committee meeting we had last week. I was going to be writing a letter and sending it to those lot members.
Okay. All right. As long as the I've had several requests from Gary about updates, and I try to update him, but I still refer it back to you.
Yeah.
As you've been in contact with the Division of Drinking Water and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. Is that all?
Follow up on – so for – just to make sure everyone's aware, our current certified water operator is going to be Jeff Michelson. He's going to be – leaving in March, or his period is he's going to no longer be our certified water operator in March. I am a certified water operator, so I can assume those duties. So I will be volunteering my duties as a certified water operator and will be using the ranch manager and others. There are some other members of the water committee that will be doing the water sampling because they live up on the ranch. It makes it easier for them to do that. This is an acceptable solution and one that was even recommended by the Division of Drinking Water. So we're going to be moving forward with that following when Jeff stops doing the or serving as our chief water operator. For our cross-connection administrator, I have still have somebody. He hasn't committed completely, so we're still looking for that. For a cross connection or backflow inspector, I've confirmed that there is a certified inspector in Kanab and she will come out. She will come out to the ranch and I do have a rate sheet, which I'll be, finalizing. It's basically $75 per device plus travel. So that's what she'll do. And that's kind of where we're at right now on that issue. Any questions on water?
So, Bart, two questions for you. One, there was originally some discussions that Kurt would be a water operator, but it sounds like you're taking that on now, and Kurt's just going to do the testing.
I think Kurt should be the water certified water operator, but he does not have the training.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so he needs to get that training. And the next time, I think the next course is end of February, beginning of March timeframe. So it is value added for that, I think, for the ranch manager to do that. It's an infrastructure job, and it for the ranch as a whole, it seems it's cleaner for it to fall under the responsibilities of whomever the ranch manager is to either be or provide a certified water operator. So
that's we're still kind of proceeding down that route, but in the interim, you're
going to pick up in the interim. I'm going to serve as certified water operator when Jeff
leaves
or terminates his work for us.
But if he gets the course done in February, theoretically,
it may not be necessary.
Okay. Yeah. Then the second question.
Well, the other thing is, Jeff, now that he knows that I am qualified, may want to resign sooner. So that's fine. And so it basically we have coverage.
Gotcha. Okay. So basically you got your certification updated and you're good to go now.
Well, yeah, I took the course a couple of years ago, and as an engineer and with my education requirements, I was allowed to be a unrestricted, but I had to apply for unrestricted status, and I just never had. So I did that. That was taken care of. And so now I am unrestricted for small systems.
Understood. And then the other question, how many backflow things do we have to – you said $75. Just roughly, what are you thinking the total cost per – they only have to come out like twice a year, right?
I think it's an annual – it's only an annual
installation, annual.
I believe. And the ones – we're going to remove the existing ones to the current lot connections, and they'll be replaced. So we'll just have four for those ones, and then we'll also have – I think we've got a couple others. I can't recall off the top of my head, but it's going to – Brent, or Vance, I don't know if you can recall off the top of your head the number of backflow prevention devices we have outside of those lot connections.
We have one in the PRV vault for the RV park,
mm-hmm.
And then we have one that I don't know if it needs to be inspected or not, and that's for – well, it probably does need to be inspected, and that's for the air the cows down in the well field. We have a backflow preventer there that runs through those troughs.
Yeah. So.
So we're looking at
that. Definitely needs to be inspected.
So we're looking at what, 450 plus whatever the travel time is. It sounds like.
Yeah.
Roughly in that realm. Gotcha. Okay. Thanks, Bart.
Yep.
Anything else, Bart?
No, unless there's any other questions on water.
All right, thanks.
Nice.
Okay. Kevin, you're up. Annual dues and cabin fees.
Thanks, Brent. Well, in my quest to become the most unpopular person on Deer Springs Ranch, when asked for agenda subjects for this meeting, I stuck my foot in my mouth and said, let's discuss cabin fees and assessment fees. So we're going to start with the cabin fees first. Obviously, with the condition of the cabins historically and the amount of repair and restoration that has been done and the amount of repair and restoration that still needs to be done, continuing on the course at $25 a night or $45 a night or whatever is just simply not feasible. It is inevitable that the cabin fees need to be raised. The question becomes as to what level, how much, or do we take it in a stepped event or whatever? Because just a quick rundown. Cabins 9 and 10, we spent roughly $20,000 each on them last year for a major overhaul. And what's probably not known by anybody other than perhaps myself and the Williams and Kurt and maybe a few other people is that the exterior walls of cabins 9 and 10 down the long sides have no external siding on them. It is strictly tongue and groove that separates the interior from the exterior. Now that those cabins are 50 or 70 or however many years old, many of those tongue and groove boards are separated, broken. And when the interior walls were stripped off, you can see daylight through those walls. It is an invitation for water damage to $20,000 worth of work. So ultimately, they need to be sided and preferably have some form of insulation put in that narrow airspace to make them a little more comfortable if we're going to go through the expense of putting siding on them to protect the work that's been done. So just a real brief, quick, you know, run down some numbers on Home Depot. You're looking at about $1,700 to $2,000 in materials depending on exact cost when you purchase it, et cetera. Now, the garden cabin, the stairwell going to the upper deck and potentially the upper deck needs to be replaced for safety purposes. That's a standing needs to happen this season before that cabin's put into the loop. It's probably going to run around $500 to $1,000 on that. So that's $5,000 of a $7,000 maintenance budget for the cabins. And we haven't even addressed anything on the cabin number one who has some kind of structural something going on because that wall is bowing. You can see it. It doesn't address additional renovation and cleanup and repairs that need to happen on other cabins. We have a water leak in the garden cabin in the kitchen area that was discovered right after Thanksgiving that's going to need to be repaired. So that's going to come out of the same $7,000 budget. We still haven't addressed anything else that probably will go wrong over the winter. So you can see that the budget for the cabins to maintain them and even keep them from degrading, it doesn't really exist. So raising cabin fees, like I said, is kind of a no-brainer. It's inevitable. It's going to have to happen. I don't know if and or when the last time there was a fee assessed and raised on that. I know at one time historically they were for free. That certainly is not equitable to all of the property owners, nor is it even feasible to try to keep them free. That ship sailed a long time ago. So we need to come up with a plan for that. We want to hear suggestions. I'm not asking for a vote on any of this today. We want to be able to obtain the information and really come up with what's going to be palatable for all people involved. On dues, our annual fee assessments, I'm not sure when the last raise was. I know I bought in 2021. It has not been raised since I purchased out here. So can someone please give me when was the last time our dues were raised, our annual assessments? 2020?
That's when it went
in. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, I believe it went into effect.
Okay. Well, in 2020, okay, well, thank you. Since 2020, I don't think there's been even one nickel of inflation nationwide. Has anybody seen the gas prices hit $4.50 a gallon since 2020? I did. I see $8 a jar for mayonnaise. I see $5 a loaf for bread. I saw lumber prices go up probably about 60% from when I did the original evaluation of what is it going to cost to build the cabin that I'm building. So it's cost me about 60% more than originally was going to. Now, in all that time, not one nickel of increased fees on this ranch. Although diesel has gone up exponentially,
yeah.
Propane's gone up exponentially, gas has gone up exponentially. The maintenance of equipment has gone up exponentially. Everything that is required to run this ranch has gone up exponentially, but the one thing that hasn't gone up is our dues, our fees, our assessments. Bottom line is, when I got here in 2021, there was a lot of stuff that was in poor repair, poor condition, and all that, and the prior two boards have done a remarkable and commendable job along with the ranch manager to put this ranch into a far better condition than it was in. If we want to see the ranch to continue to improve and not degrade back to what it was before, then we're all going to have to join forces and say, you know what? Yeah, we're probably going to need to pay some more assessed fees and dues. Now, the board has allowed a 10% increase. That's $50 a year right at this moment. Now, for $50 a year, I've read comments on the webpage that said, you know, adding to people's financial stress is not the best idea. And I'm 100% understanding that that's a concern for everyone, especially since all the prices and the cost for everybody nationwide have gone up. I mean, I get it. I pay these same prices you guys pay. You know, I feel it. But the truth of the matter is that $50 an annual fee increase boils down to somewhere around $4 a month, about $1.04 a week we're about 13 and a half cents a day. Now, I don't know about you guys, but being budget-minded and being frugal and all of the rest of that, I can cover the cost of my annual fees by clipping a dollar coupon and spending a dollar less at the grocery store. Is that dollar coupon worth making sure that this ranch improves, continues to prove, or allows us to maintain where we're at? You know, at a single assessment of $50, we're not going to move the needle on what needs to happen. Cade can give you more information about reserve funds and things that need to be in place. It's beyond my scope. I don't know all the real estate laws. Don't even want to learn it, to be honest with you. But the bottom line is it costs a lot more money to run anything and everything today, and we're going to be having to face these things. So with that, I think we'll give it everybody an opportunity to have their say in it. Unfortunately, I know the idea in the past has been floated about selling off DSROA common areas and properties. That was voted down last September, so that option is off the table. So we can kind of put that one in the pipe and smoke it. But it leaves us with hard choices to make. In tough times, you either cut the budget or you raise the prices. You know, in business, I always hated rate increases. My customers didn't like rate increases. But a lot of times they were necessary because there was no way to reduce the expenses. The insurance went up. The electricity went up. Labor went up. Everything continues to go up, and sometimes the prices have to go with it. Thank you.
Question. Before we open up to members, any of the board want to chime in before it?
So I just had one quick comment. One, I don't think we're ready to make actual annual increases and stuff to our annual dues. I mean, for 2024, we've already set our budget. And just to set everybody else's minds at ease, we're not proposing that anything be increased for the 2024 annual budget. But I agree with Kevin. We needed to be discussing, coming up with plans, seeing where our shortfalls are. But I'd like to actually know where the money is going to go if we are going to increase the fees. Just arbitrarily say we need to increase 50 or 25 and not have a plan for those funds, be it, you know, reserve funds, allocating more to the roads budget, et cetera. I'd like the board to discuss that in future meetings to go towards that. But
can I jump in real quickly?
Yeah.
Did you say that we had not discussed raising fees this year?
I don't think we're planning on doing it for this year, no, because our current budget's set in with the old fees.
Well, I mean, it has to be because that's what your budget is for. But if we're showing an issue, I thought that that's not off the table.
That's
a legitimate need.
To me, it was kind of off the table, but if the rest of the board's not, then that's fine. But me personally, I'm not in favor of raising them with this short of notice because the fees are due in January, right? So, but if we want to put a motion to that, I guess we'll entertain that. But that, my personal opinion, I'm not in favor of raising fees for January 2024. I am more in favor of increasing fees for cabins for the next season for cabins and discussing those. And we've also discussed in the past, you know, possibly more of a pay-per-play type scenario related to the cabins. So in that mindset, I'd like to propose that we do keep the actual base fee at the current rate, but add a $5 fee per additional person that stays at the cabin. Above two people. So two people are included in the current base fees. And then for everybody above two that they add, we add $5 to that. And I don't know how hard that would be to put into the system, but that from a cabin maintenance perspective and being able to offset the cost of maintaining them, doing laundry, doing et cetera that way, that one makes sense to me to have a direct input.
Could I jump in? So for points of order and all that, since we're not following any of that, it seems. It was opened up to member discussion. I don't think we actually went over to said we're doing board discussion. So I think we should let the members.
I think it was the reverse of that, Bart.
I thought Brent said member discussion.
No.
That was me.
Okay.
And I wanted to hear from the board before we turn to
open it up to members.
Yeah. I mean, we're the ones that are going to vote on it, so. Yeah.
No, so, and let me, I understand. So I just think that, Kate, I agree with you. I thought you, when you were saying we weren't going to act on it, that we weren't thinking about voting on it. I was like, no, that's what we're doing today. But just effective, it would be effective, you know, for calendar year 25, not 24, those days. I mean, it's not going to help us now, but okay, got it.
Well, so here's kind of my thought process. If we're not, we don't need to do it for January. I was thinking the annual fees, as a board need to do more research and have an actual plan of where the funds and stuff need to go. I'm not ready to propose a $25 or a $50 increase for 2025. Cause I think there needs to be more discussion around the reserve fund, et cetera, that way.
I disagree with you completely in that we already know there's a cost of living adjustment and increase. We know there's going to be inflation.
I understand that viewpoint too.
We could vote right now to peg the assessment or the annual assessments to inflation or to a 3% increase every year. That would be effective now. And then, I mean, right now we already know our buying power for what we're going to get in January is going to be less than what we got last than this year's buying power. We already know that, right? So we're already, if by not having a cost of an adjustment, we're already setting ourselves back. And all the issues that Kevin mentioned, they're going to be exacerbated. And we're sticking our heads in the sand to try to figure out where it's going to go. We know where it's going to go. It's going to go to the exact same place it's going right now because it costs more. That's what inflation means, right? And the thing is our buying power for all of our assessments hasn't changed since, well, it's gone down because of inflation since when we did our last assessment. So we need to
agree with that. And that's, yeah, I think that's a viable solution. My only hesitancy or concern with that is I know members feel like that there's areas that we could possibly look at our budget and tighten up the budget a little bit before doing that. So I wanted to give us time to make sure that we've really tightened up the budget, reviewed everything there, and there really is nowhere else that we can tighten before we go to the 2025 scenario. I mean, that is definitely one option to go ahead and do the annual increase. But I just felt like it was more fiscally responsible to actually say this is where your increase is going rather than just a blanket, here's a percentage and we're going to go up. But I can see your point as well, Bart, so understand it.
Yeah, and I think Kevin already said where the increases are going.
I understand.
This is Larry.
Go ahead, Larry.
Michael, do you or Danielle know, here's one quick and simple easy test. What did we just pay in November for property tax?
Offhand, no, I don't know, but I could look it up.
I don't think the full amount was on the profit and loss. I don't know if we paid everything because we have budgeted like $5,000 and only paid $3,500 so far. But fuel has definitely gone up. I mean, fuel's one that we've seen a definite increase in.
And that's why I kind of land on what Bart's saying is even a $50 increase, we know where the money's going. We're paying more for everything else. I mean, it's not like, you know, we can't say it's going to go to roads or it's going to go to other improvements. I mean, we're paying more for fuel, people to do the work. I mean, across the board, it costs more.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can disagree with that. I mean, everybody knows that things are costing more. I'm just not sure we've done everything we can to possibly save, but that
I think if you compare the property tax this year versus last year versus the previous year versus the previous year, it'll prove that a 10% increase in our budget every year goes nowhere.
Property taxes this year were $3,700.
What were they last year?
They were actually $4,700.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't sure that was a good comparison.
Oh, but insurance is. I know the insurance actually went down this year and was higher last year. I mean, the costs or spread out over the entire budget, not necessarily just single items. Fuel goes up and down. And one of the things I emailed out, you know, one of the thoughts was to tie annual dues to a cost of living increase or decrease. You know what? If it goes up 3%, we raise it 3%. If it goes down 3%, we don't stick it to everybody and say, well, you still pay it. It goes down 3%. We all face that.
Well, this is John Slott, 121. When people use the words cost of living and those...
Hang on, Jeff, we haven't opened it up. Let the board finish, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd just like to chime in just briefly. On a national level, last year Social Security got, what, 3.9% increase? The year before that, 8.7% increase. The reason that they increased the cost of living with Social Security annually is because, guess what, everything goes up annually. You know, we're not seeing an 8.7 or 3.9% decrease in Social Security. So, I mean, the obvious answer is that things are costing more, so they give out more on your Social Security, even though it ain't even close to covering the cost of what's really required to live in this society. Bottom line, as far as where the money goes on the cabins, I think that's a no-brainer. Any increase in cabin fees and all that needs to stay with the cabins. It needs to stay with the improvement, maintenance, and repair of those cabins. Traditionally, the membership has supported the cabins. I tend to agree with Katie, stated that these need to be financially neutral. I think Michael has stated they need to be financially neutral. In other words, they pay for themselves. I think it's a good plan to try to get them to that level if feasible. As far as the across-the-board dues, it's how do you say, oh, we wasted money on this but not on that, or we're spending too much here and not enough there. I mean, the bottom line is if you get hit with an expense like the cross-connection problem that we have to solve, well, it's a $20,000 hit. You know, of $150,000 annual dues and budget, $20,000 is a major percentage of our annual fees that goes into one problem being solved. And we haven't discussed any other problems out there. Last year, we took an $8,000 hit on a road grader. $8,000 out of $150,000, that's a substantial percentage of our budget on one piece of equipment. What happens if we have a major failure? What happens if we have to buy a $20,000 generator? Well, there goes a major portion of your operating budget. You know, we're woefully underfinanced, and, you know, I appreciate Cade's concern about not wasting money, but I don't see there's an area out here where you can really waste any money, not with how short we already are on our budget. Basically, we scramble robbing this one to pay that one, and that's a poor plan any way you cut it. And $50 annual assessment fee is not going to solve the problem, but it's going to alleviate a little bit of the pressure. You know, 4 years is a long time with no assessment increase, especially when we're looking at a roughly, depending on who you ask, about a 22% increase in cost of living across since 2019. Yeah, so, I mean, y'all go figure it out.
So I think we're all saying that we need to have an increase, and I'm not disagreeing that we need to have an increase. I think an increase needs to be had for 2025. I'm just not sure that I can commit to an amount. I mean, definitely adding a 3% option or adding the $50 now or doing one of those, that would go towards helping what. But I don't have a good idea of, again, from a reserve fund perspective, we need to have a budget line item that's going into the reserve and then planned for that coming out. So we can do that with however you guys increase it, but I kind of wanted to have some sort of reserve fund value to say, hey, we need X amount just to fund our reserve fund, or we need X amount to do whatever. And back to your point, Kevin, I mean, yeah, if we have big major expenses coming up and we don't have the money for it, It's not going to be just a $50 fee. It might be a special assessment of, you know, $50, $100, $200, whatever, in order to be able to come up with those fees or whatever that way. And that's what we're trying to avoid. Again, I'm not in disagreement that we need to increase the fees. I think there's a little bit of disagreement on how to go around it and about it. So I'm open to, if you guys have options to do it right now, I'm fine with that, but that's kind of where I was at.
This is Scott. I agree that we should do something about the cabins, that they need to be more able to pay for themselves instead of us keep putting money into it from the general fund. I'm with Cade and others. I down the road, we might have to raise our annual fees, but right now, I'm not sure until we discuss it more what would be the percentage and how to go about that. But that's my two cents right now.
So going back to the cabins real quick, because that one might be less contentious. We've talked a little bit about trying to reduce the cost of the cabins, and Dan brought up having people bring their own laundry, et cetera. Just for everybody else's awareness, past boards have decided to not bring laundry, and we kind of reaffirmed that decision from the fact that if people don't bring their own laundry, they tend to damage the beds and the pillows and et cetera that way related to it. So the board's kind of, we have evaluated that option. But I think an option of adding additional fee per user kind of offsets that question, and also doesn't put a big burden on people that are, you know, one or two members that are coming out. But if somebody brings 20 family members out to use a cabin, et cetera, that's a higher cost and higher usage. And I think that our fees should reflect that. And in the past, it's been an issue trying to maintain or manage or monitor that. And it'll still probably be, you know, if people are dishonest and they have 10 people come and only pay for 5, you know, I don't think we're in the business to police that too much. But I do think there's options for us there to say, hey, more beds were used than what you guys listed, et cetera, that way without being too draconian with it. And I trust the members. I think the members would be, if there's an option for them to pay for extra people to come and stay, I mean, even $5 a person is not that much. If we add that to 25 and they brought 10 more people, that's only a $75 a night fee for it. So my proposal would be, again, keeping the base rates the same. So if you only have 2 or 3 people coming, it's pretty close to that. But adding a $5 per person fee to each of the cabins. And I don't know how the rest of the board feels about that or if there's other options to go with that.
I struggle with that. I think it should be a flat fee, whatever we decide, not a per-person charge. And the reason is that pushes everything back on bookkeeping to collect those rates. And I don't think that's fair to put on Danielle to say, you know, make sure that they paid for the number of people that were actually staying there. I think a flat fee is a flat fee, and that's what they cost, whether there's one or whether there's 20.
Well, then maybe we base the flat fee on the number of, more dynamically on the number the cabin can support, and that would.
You know. And I'm okay with that, but pushing it back to bookkeeping to collect those charges, I think is unfair to Danielle.
Well, and that's, I mean, if only 2 people rent a cabin that has a capacity for 20, that's kind of not best use of our processes either. So I can see that being so putting the actual fees more aligned with the cabins.
But if you go to the Luxor in Vegas and you want a suite, you're going to pay for the
extra. More. Yeah.
So,
I mean, and you also pay for over a certain amount of people.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if you go anywhere in the world today,
yeah,
I can think of, on any rent, any platform, they're going to ask how many people are staying there, and if you're over their number, they're going to charge you a per head over that number fee, and that's baked into the sauce. And so if we can't do that through our current system, that's fine. Then no, maybe we just go to the flat.
We can.
But we're
yeah, we can't. Bart. I'm just
we you want. Know that-
We can, and I'm just concerned that that's...
If people lie, they lie. But that's what the ranch manager, if they see it, they say, hey, they're only supposed to have three people there, and you assess the fee. I mean, we have somebody, and if we don't catch it, we don't catch it. Or else if the cleaner goes in afterwards and sees that, hey, this is really abused, you charge them a fee for the wear and tear. I mean, that's standard practice. That's how we've got Casita here. We have an Airbnb in Oceanside. That's what you do. It's not that hard to do.
Okay.
And you do have less wear and you're charging for the wear and tear on a structure,
yeah.
Right? So if you've got two people staying in a cabin, it's not that your wear and tear is much less than four, five, six people, you know? And typically people will stay in a couch or, you know, they may even bring a sleeping bag if they're going to sleep on the couch and people use the beds. So you got two bedrooms in a main area. That's typically going to be four, five, or six people that could stay there. I don't know. I can go either way. I just think we do need to charge more for the cabins.
Well, Michael, so I kind of agree with yours to some extent, but at the same time, selfishly maybe, if I was only my wife and I'm staying in a cabin that sleeps eight, I don't know that I want to be paying the equivalent to eight people. So that's kind of why I felt like that's a little more fair if we can charge that. But I recognize from a maintenance perspective, it does increase the maintenance.
But Kay, to your point, if the initial fee is higher for the, say, the garden cabin.
Right.
That's what's open right now. Right. Will the garden cabin be open most of the year? Is that still closed?
I don't think any of the cabins are open right now. Oh. We closed everything down.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if nobody wants to stay in the garden cabin and it's available, why can't some two people stay there? And, you know, if same thing, eight people stay there or 10 people. But if the two people should pay that initial flat rate, the 10 people should pay a per head above a certain amount. To me, that makes complete and is fair. It makes sense. I just know we need to charge more for using these cabins.
Yeah, I'm fine with either one, but I kind of like the idea of trying the per person and see how it goes. If it totally blows up and there's a ton of maintenance on Danielle, then maybe we revisit it and see where it goes. But and maybe we need to reassess it a little bit more so that there's more, you know, for these bigger cabins, then the base fee is, you know, up to six people or something along those lines, yeah. You know, without a fee and work through that. But
what are our current fees as they stand right now?
25 for most of the cabins, 35 for the two bigger ones. So nothing.
I think it's actually 30 for like the garden and cabin one and 25 for all the other ones. Do you guys have an idea what the cheapest hotel room or motel room in Kanab is? I happen to know in case y'all don't.
It's probably 70 or 80 bucks at least, maybe cheapest, over 100.
It's over 100.
It's over 100.
The cheapest hotel room in Kanab is 100 plus by the time you pay the taxes. We're at $25 a night, really? Really?
Well, but we
and we're
we,
gonna
we do require them cleaning, an extra, though. Yeah, but yeah.
Oh, we need to go to we need to jump off at 40 is where we need to start. There's a 60% increase on something that's still you're still looking at $60 a night cheaper than the cheapest thing in town at 40. You know, and it's a reasonable amount to, somebody says the roadway in Kanab for less than $50 a night. That's interesting. I haven't seen it. All of my family members have tried to rent rooms there, and the cheapest we found it was the little red cabin things right there by the, right as you're going out of town, and those were like $104. So maybe at this time of year you can get something cheaper. I don't know. But, of course, nobody's here renting cabins because they're all closed. But still, at $40 a night, the truth of the matter is most people that are coming for vacation. They're family members. I shoot up my 2 weeks every year. My family comes, and we pay it. We're glad to pay it. They're close. We have a great time. It's way better than driving 40 miles from town to get out here. You know, I mean, that's the whole point of the cabins is it is for family. It is to have it as an enjoyable thing. But, you know, quite frankly, I wouldn't have put a family member in cabins 9 or 10 before they were renovated. I mean, that just like, hey, here, go stay in this meth house. Y'all will love it. You know, now I would be proud to put my family members in 9 or 10. They're both very nice. 7's very nice. 6 is nice. 8, nice. A lot of the cabins are in great shape. There's a reason we can charge more, because they have been renovated. I'd like to see that happen to the rest of the cabins. I'd like to see the garden cabin in great shape. I'd love to see cabin 1 where it's safe and you know, fixed up the rest of the way. But ain't none of it going to happen if we don't do something with the finances. Instead, it's going to go exactly the opposite direction. There's a reason they were in poor condition before, because of the budget. You know, business is business, and it always costs more. So, I mean, how do y'all want to do this? You want to close them down one at a time because they come in such bad repair? I mean, that's where we're going if we don't do something. So, I mean, y'all go ahead, figure it out. I know everybody doesn't want to pay more. I get it. Nobody wants to pay more. I don't want to pay more. I don't want my family to pay more. But the truth of the matter is, we don't really have an option. Is it just that simple?
I haven't heard anybody say that we shouldn't be charging more. It's now a question of what we need to charge. Are there any board members that say we shouldn't charge any more for the cabins?
Okay, can I say something just for history for some of the newer board members here?
You'll get your chance, Jeff. You'll get your chance. We're not voting yet, but you will get your chance. We'll open it up for all member input. We will.
Okay.
No, this is Dan Wirt. Michael, I really disagree with that. Don't cut off reasonable member.
It wasn't cutting input. The same as, Dan, and I apologize, I'm not meaning to cut you off, but it's the same as if you were at your city council meeting.
I'm glad you brought up the city council, because I go there, and their behavior is absolutely atrocious, and we do not have to replicate the city, Kanab city council, atrocious, unreasonable behavior.
So, and I'm on multiple boards, and I'm sure you are as well. But
this is a small organization in which you should not be cutting members off. And there's been this has not been an onerous process. This has been a very respectful process. So please don't do that. I was just at, I've been at several recent Kanab city council meetings, and their behavior is just awful, undemocratic. We can be different. So please don't do that.
So, Dan, I think we've got two different options. One, we can allow people to comment when the board is trying to have discussions, but then the board doesn't have time to have the discussion. And so what we're trying to do is give you guys time to give feedback and give your voice and do that near the end. So I understand totally where you're coming from, and you want to have your feedback when you're thinking about it, but I don't know how we do that and still keep the meeting running in a timely manner. You're muted, Dan. Sorry. Dan, you're muted.
At the end, when it's all said and done, and that is not correct.
Well, we're as we said before, we will not take any votes. We won't do anything until after you guys have had a chance to do input.
Okay, this is Karen Fry, lot 13. I agree to you to a certain extent, but when it goes around the table 3 and 4 times with the board and somebody might have something important to say, I think they should be able to say it. We've heard from everybody on the board 3 or 4 times. It's gone around the table 3 or 4 times, and people have things to say. They should have the right to say what needs to be said.
I understand where you're coming from. We're just trying to keep the meeting moving and where things are at. But
we have all the time in the world here. This is a small organization.
We do not have all the time in the world. We have other lives, and I have to be off at 12 o'clock. It's 2 hours for a board meeting. I've never been to a board meeting that we have to, if we establish
a time. Then you weren't at the last Kanab City Council meeting, which went on for like 4 hours.
Yeah, the agenda items help a lot too. But let's just move along.
Yeah. What I wanted to say was that in 2019, when the cabin rate structure was changed, it more than quadrupled the cost to members to rent a cabin. So when you're talking about cabin increase rates and all these things, just remember, because some of you are newer, history says just a handful of years ago, it quadrupled.
So it went from $5 a night to $25 a night?
It went from $2 a person per night to $25 minimum. And then just of what, last year, it went another $25 because the board elected to add a $25 reservation fee. Now it's $50 minimum, period, and then $25 each additional night for so on and so forth. So multiply that by your 14 days, your 2 weeks of stay for, say, two people like Kate and his wife or my wife and I, and the rates more than quadrupled.
So I think that implies that we're getting to where we need to be. We've all talked about these, you know, the cabins being able to carry themselves, and they have not been able to carry themselves. And this has been an ongoing problem for decades. And we addressed it. We tried to address it a few years ago when we had that quadruple increase, as you said. But it still isn't. It still hasn't addressed the problem sufficiently. That's what we're talking about. We already mentioned all the major renovations that had to have been done and still need to be done, right? I mean, $2 a night per person multiplied by the days available to rent will cover not even a quarter or a tithe of what we have to do on these cabins.
Well, that's
not to say cleaning, too.
It's also being subsidized by membership dues.
And that's the discussion, and that's the point that I guess a lot of people are trying to make is there are a lot of people who don't stay in the cabins, who feel that their dues are going for something they don't utilize. They'd rather their dues go to maintaining the infrastructure of the ranch. I mean, we've heard all these comments from different people. The fact of the matter is they should cover themselves at least.
But if you do all the math and put all the numbers in there, it's not going to happen. Because
not on $25 a night.
It ain't going to happen ever, because if you really put everything that is cabin involved in there, like Brent had mentioned earlier, probably 80% of the caretaker's job is cabins. So take 80% of their salary, stuff that in there too, take the reservationist job, take the vehicles, take the fuel running back and forth, and the maintenance, and the propane, and all of it. If you truly want to come up with a real number, and I'll tell you right now, it's well over $100 a night.
Thanks for making the argument for us.
It's over $100 a night right now.
Thank you for making the argument.
Well, and I think that's what we're trying to do is we're not trying to pay for every single thing, but we're trying, again, rather than increase annual fees by a more significant amount, we can try and offset the cost to the people that are actually using the things. And to your point, we'll never actually get there, but I think we need to do that. So, Kevin, are you opposed to increasing any fees of the cabin, or you just say we need to consider the values more?
No, I'm not opposed to increasing any of the fees. But what I'm opposed to is trying to push it through with 3 weeks left in the year with the cost of living argument. That's ridiculous.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks.
A proper cost analysis done on the cabins, on the water systems, on the roads, on everything, before anybody ever starts talking about increased money, increased money, increased money. No, do a proper analysis. Then we talk about money.
Jeff, I think you can answer your own question. How much did y'all just spend on Broad Hollow? Really? You want a cost analysis? Let's just do a quick cost analysis of what you guys just spent on Broad Hollow. Now multiply times however many other miles of road are left that need to be having the same level of care and attention. And we're not talking about widening, just repair. I can tell you right now, the road going to the up been touched, and it's rough as a cob. I mean, there's literally tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of expense in roads alone. And then you're going to say we need to have a cost analysis? Goodness gracious. I mean, we're not even talking about all the one small area.
At $15,000 privately on Broad Hollow Road. Before we did that, we met with the contractors, we met with all the Broad Hollow residents, and we did exactly that, a cost analysis, before we ever pulled that trigger. So, yes, but not every road out here requires the type of work that we did to our road. Some of them just need to be manicured. Some of them might need a culvert moved because it's not working properly. So to use that example of our road for every mile of road out here is absurd.
Okay. So real quick.
Businesses have to be done. Impact studies have to be done. Just like Cade was talking about, if a driveway connects to a road, somebody needs to consider that. Know that that's happening. Before throwing money at something. Otherwise, we're going to place ourselves out of here.
Impact studies come free, huh? Who's going to not get paid to do an impact study? I mean, come on, it all costs money. Let's get down to the nuts and bolts of it. The reality of it is, no matter what you do, costs money, period. Hands down. So how are you going to get around? Going to cost money. I mean, just to do a quick assessment, at $15,000 for 2 miles of road, if you do the math, is $1,470,000 for the other 98 miles. Let's just consider that the other 98 miles don't need that and just cut it in half. Okay, you're still talking $700,000 that we don't have. You want to cut it again, cut that half into a quarter. Now you're only talking $350,000 that we don't have. Cut it again. You're going to go down to 17, or I mean, the numbers keep getting smaller. No, it's the same thing. It's money that we don't have, period. So, I mean, the bottom line is we're not talking about, oh, we're just willy-nilly wanting to put in this great thing and that great thing. We're not even talking about improving anything. We're just talking about not going backwards. And if we do nothing, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to go backwards at minimum the rate of inflation, and that's if nothing bad happens. And tell me, for the full-timers out here, that you see nothing ever breaks or goes wrong on Deer Springs Ranch. It always just runs like a fine-tuned Swiss watch out here.
Hey, Kevin, I think we've got the board's opinions and stuff that way, like it was discussed. If we're opening it up to the members, we probably need to open up, open it up to the other members that need to or have comments or information on this. Anybody else got stuff to say? Dan? Karen?
I believe that can you hear me?
Yes.
That we should have user and impact fees for the various elements of the ranch, including the cabins. And this way, people who don't use the cabins much will be happy. And those who use the cabins a lot will be paying an impact fee. Personally, I like to occasionally use the cabins. I agree that the amount of money in the budget is not sufficient to deal with the maintenance and improvements that are necessary. So I wouldn't mind paying twice that, in other words, $50 a night. Maybe even a little bit more to account for the really high expense items like laundry. And that would still be half or less than what a hotel room can be obtained in Kanab. I also don't think that we are paying sufficient attention to other sources of income, which would be reasonable and not damage the ranch. I haven't heard anybody talk about the idea of selling off association lots, platted lots owned by the association. We're not talking association land. It's the answer about association, developing association land is very clear. It would be entirely possible to shore up a number of these budget shortfalls by selling one or more of the four platted lots owned by the association. I have been very upset by this move to throttle reasonable member input at the appropriate time in the discussion. Don't do that.
Thanks, Dan. Anybody else have any feedback or comment?
Yes, I do. It's Tanisha Sporlot, 93. I have a question. What is the fee that we charge for after you've used your free 2 weeks for members?
It is $45 a night for the smaller cabins and $65 a night for the larger.
I think that should be raised.
But I saw in the comments you didn't think it should be raised.
No, not your free 2 weeks. But I think that after your 2 weeks are up, that's pretty cheap.
Well, they're no longer free, right? I think at one point they may have been free 2 weeks, but yeah.
No, I'm not saying they're free. I think you should still have to pay because we've always paid. But I think after your 2 weeks, then that fee should go up.
I don't know if we've got any numbers on how many people are using past their 2 weeks, but I understand where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, that's just my thoughts.
Understood.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Kim Fry, Lot 13. I feel that the cabins are a benefit to the members and also their families, and I think that's great. But those who do not use it, I've been at the ranch for 20 plus years, and I've never used the cabins. And we continue to, you know, pay for the cabin use for all of our members. But as a benefit, I would think that those who are using the cabins should be the ones who are. So the impact fee for cabins, I totally agree with Dan. I think that is a great idea because I you know, those who are not using the cabins, I feel, that it's part of the ranch, But I feel like that we need to raise the cabins, the cabin fees, along with the impact fees of those who are using it, not raise our dues so that everybody's paying for everybody to use the cabins. That seems to be our biggest expense, is maintaining the cabins, cleaning the cabins. And if that's the case, I feel that the members who are using the cabins should pay for that. That's all I had to say.
Thanks, Karen.
This is Mike. Can I have a minute?
Sure.
Just real quick on the cabin specifically. I've owned for 7 years. For the first few years, I used my 2 weeks, consistently. The last couple of years, I haven't been able to use them at all. But I agree that the cabin availability is a benefit to owning at the ranch. It needs to be continue to be made available to everybody, whether they use it or not. And I think the fees need to be reasonable. And I'm not opposed to increasing the fees for the cabins, although I agree with Jeff that the fees that we pay today are considerably more than they were when we first started. But again, I don't have a problem with that, because even with what we're paying today, still a great deal, and it should continue to be a great deal. And I think in terms of cabin, the base rates should be based on the number of people up to X. So, Kate, if it's only you and your wife, then you're still paying for the rate. I mean, I think the smallest cabin sleeps 8, possibly.
I think there's a couple that sleep 6, but yeah.
Six or 8. So basically the base rates need to be established based on it sleeps up to 6, up to 8, up to 15, up to 26 for the garden cabin. So I think having different rates for the cabins based on the number of people they sleep makes sense. And then paying for extra people who stay there above that also makes sense. So if I'm renting, a cabin that sleeps up to 8 and I've only got 2 people in it, then that's okay. I'm paying for extra space. So, and then the other thing I wanted to talk about is linens. Did I hear that we're not going to require people to bring linens in?
No, we discussed giving that as an option for a reduced rate, but the concern was that it would cause damage to the beds and the pillows and stuff that way, because people don't bring their linens and they don't. So,
okay, I agree with that. I agree that the ranch needs to provide linens, and then the people that are going to be using them pay for it. They pay for, replacement cost and laundry and all the rest of it. So
yep, that was,
I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so somebody was trying to talk related to the linen stuff. Was that Bart? Anybody have other questions related to linens? Mike, yeah, was that Larry?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Kate. Oh, Dan. Okay.
Yeah. When was that discussed?
So the board was discussing it back and forth in emails.
So maybe that sort of discussion should occur in a meeting where the membership can be involved.
Dan, I don't want to disagree with you a little bit, but here's the difficulty, right? The members can't make every single decision. That's the reason that the board was put into place. And the board has to have some capability to discuss things outside of full member input. And we're trying to bring back to you the stuff that was discussed so you have transparency and visibility to it, but it's a hard balance. I mean, I totally get where you're coming from, and I hate when people don't let me provide feedback, but we've got to find a method that we can allow you to provide feedback without taking 10 hours in a board meeting too, right? If you want to come and get on the board, then that's an option too for you to serve and make that work. So I'm struggling a little bit there.
The members,
it's a board meeting, Dan. It's not a members meeting. This is a board meeting. And we're trying to give you opportunity to provide feedback, but at the same time, we can't come to the members with every single decision or everything that's going to be done, or we'll never get anything done.
Hey, Dan, this is Mike, and it's actually my turn right now. But I agree with you that we need to provide member input. What I would say to you is this is the opportunity for member input. And if somebody cares enough to provide their input, then they need to be on this meeting. And, you know, I have attended almost every single board meeting since I've been an owner, but most people don't do that. Most people trust and rely on the board members to make the right decisions. So I agree with Cade. All the details should be left to the board, and the board meeting is a place for people to provide input if they want to. So that's all I wanted to say, but thank you very much.
Okay, is it my turn now?
It is.
Okay. That's exactly why I'm here. But the way that this is structured right now, there's not an opportunity for timely member input.
Well, so Dan, if you look at the agenda, item number 7 was open forum for members, and maybe we need to change it so we do votes and stuff after the fact. But we are trying, and I get the timely, and we're trying right now. We're giving you timely member input. We're talking about cabins, and you guys have the opportunity to talk about cabins. So again, in normal procedures, like it was brought up previously, normal procedures, all the input from members is done at the end of the meeting. And we, again, we're trying to balance that out. So if you got better suggestions on how we can do that, then.
Yes, I do have a suggestion. The appropriate time for member input, for limited member input, is when these things are being discussed, not after the fact, when it makes much less sense.
Well, okay, so maybe we can do this, Dan, and maybe meet in between. If we have a major item like this where we're talking about the fees or whatever that way, as soon as we're done discussing that particular item, open it up to the members after the board, I think it was Michael that actually said it. We were trying to get the boards to have their discussion so that we can all get to kind of understand what the board members want. And then we also need to get the members' input on it. So if we do the board first, then the members' input, and then a vote, that might keep things kind of lined up and working for you.
It's still my turn, Bart.
I was going to amplify what you said, and I was going to give an example. So in most boards that I've been on, actually, there is that opportunity for timely input. So I agree with Dan on this. Typically what you do is you'd have – I mean, even if you go to Kanab City, which I know I agree with you, they definitely stifle people there. But you have member input, you have public comments in the very beginning, and that would be member comments in the beginning. Keep it short and sweet, not related to topics that are going to be on the agenda, separate stuff. Then at each agenda item, you basically have an initial public comment, or in this case, member comment. Minimum comments to allow us to get to the discussion, but you give them that opportunity then to make their decisions, then we discuss, and then we vote. And so that is how, and even I'm on the Regional Advisory Council for the Wildlife Board. Same thing. It's every, where there's public, there's questions, there's comments, you have that interplay and exchange. So I agree that we shouldn't be stifling members' inputs, and it should be timely because it, after the fact, at the end of the meeting is when you do like new agenda or new items that members would like to talk about.
Well, we're just going to get better at coordinating it somehow so that we can start meetings.
I agree, Dan, that your point is valid.
Well, we'll work on that, Dan, and try and come up with a better way to get your member input in there and keep the meetings going.
You know, Kay, regarding the linens, you know, the way you presented it what's the Latin? A fait accompli, you know? In other words, you made a decision outside of the outside of the board meeting and with no opportunity for member input. You know,
so just to take it back to that one real quick, Dan. So in the last meeting, you guys asked for a survey out to the members to see if they'd be willing to have lend-ins or not. So the board discussed the logistics of putting together that survey, and it was brought up in previous past minutes that a survey had already been conducted of the members. We reviewed that survey of the data that everybody said. We also reviewed the fact that damage had been done previously to stuff, and the board made a decision based off of the data that was provided and the survey that had already been done that we were not going to entertain the option of providing linens. So that's how it all occurred. You did make that suggestion last meeting. We heard the suggestion, we evaluated the suggestion, and made a decision as a board.
And you didn't provide the membership involved in this meeting right now with that explanation. You just said that's how it is. We made a decision. You didn't provide any of those details.
No, I did. I said that we looked at past meetings. I didn't go into all the details, but I did tell you that we looked at past meetings and past decisions, and that was what the decision was. Because
No, you're saying that now, but you have not said that before in this meeting.
We'll listen to the recording, but I did mention that. So anyway, I don't want to spend the meeting arguing with you, Dan, but so back to the subject of hand. Is there any other comments on the cabin fees?
I had an update while you all were talking. I went through the spreadsheet, and there were 71 nights last year that were above and beyond the 2 weeks.
Out of how many total nights?
Well, I didn't figure that out. I figured up what you have.
Yeah, understood.
I don't know what the total nights are out there.
Here's my question. Do any board members have a proposal or a fee or something that we're going to decide on and vote on today? And are we to that point, or do we need to do more research? I kind of feel like we need to come up with a better proposal. I think it's sounding like people are okay with the fee increase. I think we need to do a fee increase. But I think we need to do a little bit more analysis to determine what our increase is and what we're proposing before making a decision today, unless we've got something that we feel like we can vote on today.
No, I would like to make a motion, because that's how we do this in order. For those of you who haven't sat on a lot of boards, motions are made and order is kept. And this is probably the most out of order meeting I've attended, except for perhaps maybe last month. But I've moved to table the discussion. No vote on it today. Let's get the input from all of those who want to have input. If you go on the website, there is each of our personal emails are on the website. We also have a board website that we can be reached through. So if you have specific input that you would like to have us look at before there's a vote made, then please reach out to us. That's the whole point. There is communication available. It doesn't have to be in a circuitous manner in an open board meeting. Let's get that input. We reconvene next month, and we will take a board vote at that point. It gives us an opportunity to weigh all the input and come up with a better plan. I agree with you, Cade. We're not ready to take a vote today, but the discussion needed to be opened. It needed to be had. We need to understand where we are and where we're going. So the best thing to make this a timely thing is to table it. So I move to table it. Do we have a second?
I second the motion to table this discussion till next time.
Okay, those in favor.
Aye. Any opposed?
Okay.
Motion
discussion
carries.
Is how we can move on. So please, once again, everyone who didn't get a chance to speak or who wants to have input, I've been seeing the chat roll, and there's a lot of chat stuff. I haven't been able to keep up with it, but there's a lot of different ideas. Let's hear them. I saw one that said there's 100 different ways to approach this. I would love 100 different options to raising dues, to be honest with you. I would love 100 different options to raising cabin fees. I don't know what they are. If you know something we don't, please inform us. Give us, let us know what we can do better, do different. That's the whole point of discussion. And Dan, that you're more than welcome. That's how we want this thing to work. A major complaint was transparency in the past. Well, the board just made decisions and then come out and told us what we voted on. Well, the board changed that, and we're trying to be more and more open, transparent, so we're having these discussions more openly. But let's get it out there. Let's throw it in the wind and see what sticks. So, you know, by all means, please give us your input. It's important. We want to know. And if there's a better idea, let's hear it. We'll do it. So anyway, thank you guys. I guess whoever's running the meeting needs to run it now. I'm going to shut up. Thank you.
All right, Kevin. Thanks. All right. Just a couple of observations. Just so everyone knows, historically, we, at one point in time, we did attempt to have member supply their own linen, and we kept the program in place for approximately a year, and we discovered that we were having problems with the pillows being dirty because there were no pillow covers, the mattress covers being dirty, just a couple of things. So anyway, we can discuss it, and I agree with Kevin 100%. Let's put some things together, look at it, accept members' input, and then come back with a good decision. We're pretty well ready to move on, except I have one comment for Jeff and Tina, and that is, Tina, if you're going to eat, you need to provide something for every member. This is just like a classroom. You bring bubble gum for everybody. All right, so brief update on your areas of responsibility. Kate, is there anything addition you have on roads?
So I don't have any additions on roads, but I did want to comment that tomorrow we're going to have the meeting to start the bylaws discussion. I haven't sent out the Zoom link. As soon as this meeting's over, I'll get with the people. If you haven't identified that you want to help out and provide input into the bylaws, let me know, but I'll be sending out that link after this meeting.
Is that it?
That's it for me. Thanks.
Okay. Larry, anything else on the gravel or anything else?
nothing further.
Okay. Bart, I know you had to leave at noon. Are you still on?
I am. I'm just no longer at my computer. I'm just walking and moving around with my phone. So, yes, I have nothing else to discuss. The Water Committee still needs – well, I guess the Water Committee, we still need to look into how we're going to perfect and work on our irrigation water rights. Those are some ongoing discussions we've been having. Nothing resolved at this time.
All right. Okay, thank you. Michael, anything else?
Nope.
Scott. Anything else?
Yes. I wasn't here at the beginning. I don't know what we did with the minutes, or are we going to do that next meeting? We can work that out. The rabbit brush mowing, it was set up to start the midweek this last week, and we still haven't got the tractor and mower here. They keep putting it off, and so now, if you've heard anything different, I heard now it's probably Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday again next week that might start. If you know anything more than I do, please say something.
That should be the plan. As of last night, they were still using that tractor down in Lower Johnson Canyon. When I came home in the dark, they were out operating it with the lights. As soon as they're finished plowing and planting, then it will be moved to Deer Springs with the big mower, and so I will follow up. I'm supposed to get a phone call tomorrow, Sunday night, but between Kevin Ballard and Kurt and myself, and maybe you if you can come back over and help, but we can probably get it done without. Mowing and spraying should all happen possibly Monday, Tuesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday.
All right, thank you. Anyway, that's the report on that. So hopefully next week for sure we'll get that started, and hopefully the weather will hold out that we can get that done. So
Scott, did you go in for 3 days with not being able to get any work done, or you were taking time off for that, right?
I took time off, but I've been working on some of my own stuff. So I'll see if they've got anything pressing at work, and if not, I'll take some more time off to help get this finished. So
appreciate the sacrifice, Scott.
Yeah. And Scott, you don't want to listen to the first part of the meeting where you weren't here. we'll just accept your minutes when you next month.
All right.
We'll double it.
Well, I thought everybody accepted them, Brent, and there was a request to get them posted to the website. So are we...
Yeah, I still need to get with Danielle and do last month's, and also even the... I'm still... haven't got the meeting from... Oh, shoot, my brain's not working. The annual meeting, I still need to get the minutes from that so we can post those. So, yeah, I'll work on getting those done for next week, next month. Anyway, thank you.
Okay. Kevin, anything else?
Just very briefly, the cabins, Garden Cabin 7 and 8 were closed after Thanksgiving. We discovered that water leak there. And also the Cabin 8 and headquarter electrical issues. I don't know. I know Kurt had said you guys were going to do the repair on the electrical junction for Cabin 8. I don't know if that's been done or not. But other than that, nothing new to report.
Okay. Yeah, we haven't gotten to that. I did take my generator down, and I've wired up the headquarters solar, and it will run off the generator. I haven't done a full test on it yet, but I'm pretty confident it's going to work, just so you know.
Thanks, Brent.
Okay. Danielle, do you have anything? I'm including you in this brief update.
I don't. I will be working to get the assessment invoices sent after the 15th, so they can be there to the members before the end of the year. And, yep, those are due beginning of the year. So if anyone has questions on assessments, let me know.
Hey, Danielle, did we hear anything back from Garcane when they were going to put that meter on the tanks?
I have not. He was talking to his tech, and I gave him about a week and was going to follow up with him this week if he had a chance.
Thanks.
So are they putting meters just their tanks? I guess I don't understand how this works. Are all the tanks at DSR that they fill owned by them, even the big one at the ranch house?
Yes. So they will be putting, Garcane will be putting meters on all the tanks they own, you know, across however big of an area they serve. So it will be done in phases. I had reached out to make the headquarters one a priority on their list.
I didn't know if the headquarters tank was a Garcane tank or if DSROA owned that tank.
It's a Garcane tank.
Thank you.
I believe we pay $1 per tank on all the 13 tanks we own per year.
Any other questions for Danielle? Okay, I've waited the appropriate amount of time. All right, we're opening this up for member input. You got 2 to 3 minutes each, and I'm holding you to that. So, go ahead, okay, Mike.
This is Mike. I'll go first. Just a couple quick things. I already gave my cabin input earlier. So, first I want to say I love the fact that we have the opportunity for input. And even though we don't always agree on everything, we all agree the Deer Springs Ranch is wonderful. We want to be part of it, and that's why we're here. So thank you for allowing us to have input. On the certified water operator, for the future, one of my comments is, in the past, the certified water operator was the ranch manager. And because we had a problem with a revolving door of ranch managers, it didn't allow us to have consistency with the certified water operator. So my suggestion is we think about, or the board thinks about, having the certified water operator be someone other than the ranch manager, because we shouldn't have to replace the certified water operator every time there's a change in the ranch manager or something else. So maybe it should just be somebody who lives up there full time or lives nearby that's willing to do the job. Just a comment. On annual dues, I'm not opposed to increasing the annual dues, but at the same time, I don't think it should be automatic. So I don't agree with any kind of a, you know, cost of living increase. The government, we all know, is extremely wasteful. And the government increases their budget whether they need it or not. And if they don't need it, then they just waste it. And we're different. We're not a government agency. We're a small community, and we have the ability to control our expenses. We have the ability to have volunteers help out where the government doesn't have that. I've been personally responsible for generating million-dollar business budgets in the past, and I always use the approach of zero-based budgeting. So if we don't need anything for something next year, then we're not gonna try to find money for that unless we do need it. So that's why I agree with the people that are saying if we are going to increase the annual dues, we need to be able to explain why. So again, I'm not opposed to increasing annual dues, but I don't agree that we need $700,000 for roads. So we don't need to just increase the budget with a blanket dollar amount. We need to increase the annual dues for a budget for things that we know we're going to need. So that's my input. Oh, final comment. Cade, I'm willing to help with the bylaws committee. I volunteered on that in a meeting in the past. But I don't know if that was recorded or not. So you can include me on that if you want to.
I'll send it to you. Sounds good.
Thank you. I'm done. Thank you.
And you came in just under the wire. So, okay, Tina?
I just have one statement on raising the HOA dues. Developing the reservationist job as a volunteer unpaid position essentially raised everyone's dues by $20. The $6,000 salary divided by 300 lots is $20 per lot per year. So we're already raising it, $20 a year. That's it.
All right. Anyone else?
This is Dan. Yes, we need member input in a timely fashion, not after the fact when the thread is lost. And I agree that this is not a government institution. We're a small organization which can handle timely member input. Regarding the linens thing, it would have been nice if at the time the board could have said, well, we discussed this by email, and these were the elements of the discussion. That didn't happen. I take the point. If you had all said that there were problems in the past and we decided not to do that again, at the time, that would have been reasonable. But that didn't happen. So you know, but I take the point that those are reasonable considerations about damaging mattresses and pillows and so forth. Now, I think there should be any discussion of raising dues until other resources have been examined. You know, for example, perhaps $400,000 from the four lots, platted lots owned by the association. Regarding cabin fees, I think they should just be doubled right now. And an additional $10 per person, or maybe $5, $5 to $10 per person added to the cabin, particular cabin fee, depending on how many people are using that cabin to pay for laundry. So the typical cabin would be $50 plus, and if there were four people, $20 to $40 for the linens. I've been around probably as long or longer than any of you. And this question of this problem of people feeling unfairly treated because they don't use this or that resource is easily addressed by impact and user fees. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Anybody else? Okay, so Brent, next meeting.
Brent, this is Larry. I keep seeing my computer shut down, so I've been on my phone, and I keep seeing something from the comments. I wonder if Danielle or anybody could review that real quick, see if there's any other questions or comments that people have made in the chat. I've been unable to see any of that.
So I've been reviewing them, and I think we've addressed them all. Okay. We can capture them in the minutes as well, but I think most of them were just their input and stuff without verbal input. So I think we've got their input and stuff that way, Larry.
Okay, it just pops up over the face of whoever's talking real quickly and then disappears, and I can't.
Yeah, I don't think there's any outstanding questions. Everything else was comment or feedback that we'll need to take in consideration as we're doing it.
All right, I just didn't want to leave anybody hanging.
Hey, Brent, this is Kathy. I have made comments in here that have not been addressed, and I know we've taken a lot of time on the cabin and raising the cabin fees and stuff like that, and I'm thinking if we were able to get a committee together and kind of go over and analyze all of the cabin expenses and stuff like that, that we could maybe form and get input from all the members and not have to worry about them being shut down or they don't like what's being said. And I think that if we were able to do that and then take to the board for consideration, it might take away from all this time that we've spent on this. And I think it would help. I know we've got a water committee. I think if we would take the opportunity of using our members more, I think we would probably be able to resolve a lot of the issues, to be honest with you.
Well, Kathy, thanks, and I totally agree. And with the powers vested in me, I'd like to appoint you the president of that committee, and I'd like to throw your sister into the fire herself, so Karen can be part of it. And then anybody else who wants to volunteer? No takers. Okay.
I would like as many. Mike, thank you. Dan, I would love to have you. Tanisha, Bozes, anybody that has some background of the cabin usage, and I think it would be very helpful.
Have I been invited? Did I hear that?
I invited you, Dan, yes.
Well, did you know that God so loved man, he didn't form a committee?
Okay.
All right, Kathy, I'm gonna lean upon you to head that up, and you can have anybody on that committee you want, including Dan.
Okay, I'm all for committees and all that. Committee needs to work in a timely fashion because we got between this meeting and the next meeting to get the input. So if you're going to do a committee, I would suggest getting on with it. Yeah, I mean, committees are great. Committees, thank you, Dan. God so loved the world, he didn't leave it up to a committee, or otherwise nothing would have ever got accomplished. We'd still be the formless, shapeless void. So that's where we're going with.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for your positive input. I appreciate it. We will work on it. And I will put that thing out on Facebook, see if we can get input, more input on that. Thanks.
So you're going to organize this via the Facebook group?
Those members that would like input, I think, needs to be, and I think to organizing the committee, you know, if we get 6 to 10 people on the committee would be great. And I may ask.
Are you going to contact me about the committee meeting?
I will.
Okay.
I will contact you.
Okay. Next meeting. January 13th. Will that work?
I'm good with that.
Isn't there a holiday on the 15th? I don't know if that matters, but yeah. I'm fine with that right now.
I'm fine with it.
All right.
Yeah, I'm fine with it also.
Okay. All right. We're going to call it the 13th, 10 o'clock. And all right. I have one other thing to point out once again to Tina Collins. Look at the time. Did I tell you at this meeting is it going to be over by then? Okay. All right. I move to adjourn. Second.
I second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. All right. I'll see you all on the 13th. Have a fine day.
Bye.
Bye.